Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Like, when you ask somebody in the morning how their day is, and he just answers another day closer to the parade, like, you know, yeah. I'm like, yeah, oh, sweet, we're going that way. Right on, man. Sign me up. I'm in.
Welcome back to the Compound Podcast presented by Parse Rum. Yes, I did say presented by Parse Rum, the best sponsor in the world. When I say Parse, you say rum. Parse.
Rum.
Parse.
Rum.
Zach, come on.
Rum.
I said it.
Rum. Rum. Rum.
I love Parse. You love Parse. Welcome back to rum. The Compound Podcast. We have a very special episode with former Chicago Cub Ryan Dempster, current off the mound host on the Marquee Network. Demp is absolutely fantastic and we love him. Correct. One of the funnier baseball personalities out there.
I had never talked to him that much and I didn't realize he was that hilarious, to be honest.
Dakota, do you remember a few years ago in spring training he talked to us one day? He just had like his own thing. We were just like, who is this guy? Like, I know who Ryan Dempster is, whatever. And I remember we were just like dying laughing the whole time. I mean, like, he said how he's from Canada, like, did all these things, and I was just like, this guy's hilarious.
The best part was he was talking about Rowan and how he loves Rowan, and then, like, the more he talked, I was like, these two literally seem like the exact same person.
Same guy, same as JY, too. If you
talk. And he'd talk about, Demp was talking about how he gets pissed, and he'd, like, have to freak out, and I'm like, I mean, that seems just like Rowan. Like, there's just a little psycho in there, you know? Like, it's in there, down deep. There's a little psycho. A
little nice guy Canadian psycho?
Yes.
Demp, as a teammate, was probably the absolute best. I mean, just funny every single day.
But not afraid to get in your ass if you needed to.
Yeah, oh yeah.
There's guys out there who are destined to make, like, to bring a team together like that, and he's one of them.
Mm-hmm. I think they had so many guys on that Boston team, they were destined to bring guys together. That's why every time we talk to somebody about that team, it's like, yeah.
You ask them about it, and they take a step back. They're like, oh, that team.
It sounded like there was literally like five or six guys that you could define as like glue guys.
Like, absolutely.
But obviously still good players, but it was just like, these guys bring a clubhouse together.
100%.
That was before, obviously, like, social media. I mean, kind of, like, as it was getting bigger, but, like, nothing to where it is now. And, like, you could do whatever you wanted, you know? And it was just, like...
And reporting wasn't on social media as much as it is now. Like, you weren't getting your news from writers on social media. You weren't refreshing your boy Jeff Passan's page to see what's happening.
JP.
Right.
Zach, also in the interview, just before people listen, little Rossi, Demp was like, yo, did you guys listen to any of my episodes? And you were like, yeah, saw a little bit with Rossi. He's not your manager anymore. You don't have to, like, suck up to him. You don't have to watch his shows.
It was on my Twitter. He never was technically my manager.
Oh, spring training doesn't count? You didn't care about those games?
He was your manager.
I wasn't invited to summer camp, so I really wasn't my
manager. You want
to
know who my manager is? Marty Peavy. Ever heard of him?
Interesting. I thought Hap was going to get some kudos, but no, he didn't. So that's why I wanted to listen.
That was awkward. He asked if I had watched any of it. I was like, no.
You should have said, I don't get Marquee, man. Sorry.
Oh, I should have. I should have been like, yeah, sorry, I would. But, like, Marquee's not free and I can't afford it. I'm a minor leaguer.
We need to say who the winner of T-Shirt Tuesday was. And T-Shirt Tuesday, Taylor D. Pressey. At Taylor D. Pressey. Presley. And she is getting assigned large.
These people are thinking that it's signed from Dakota and I as well. And that's why.
Yeah. They probably get it and they're like, oh, it's just Ian. Well, you know what? I might actually pick a different shirt now. Is it too late?
They probably just throw it in the garbage.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. I mean, sorry.
Did I mention that this episode is sponsored by Parse Rum?
You did. You did earlier. Yes.
Parse.
Don't make me do it, bro.
Yeah. Are you drinking out of a Padres cup?
Oh. He had a Mariners cup. Oh, he's got it. It's both.
Oh, no.
You're a Tiger, man. Come on.
Come on.
I'm a baseball fan.
Go Tigers.
You're a Detroit Tiger.
Let's talk to Demp, and then after we talk to Demp, we'll talk a little bit about the Masters before we go. Here's Ryan Dempster. Demp, I think we should start out.
Yeah.
By the way, to all the listeners, we have Ryan Dempster joining the compound. Demp, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
When I asked you to come on, you called me and we had a nice conversation about golf the other day. And then you went out and fired a crazy good score.
It was fun. I fired up a 74. Yeah, 74. And it was fun because I triple bogeyed number 9.
Jeez.
Yeah.
What did you say? You hit like 16 greens?
I counted them 14 greens.
14.
Wow. Yeah, you don't get that. I mean, those guys, watching guys on TV, they do that all the time. But as an amateur golfer, when you get going like that, it's like, oh, yeah, I can play with the big boys until you play your next round. And then it's like, no.
Demp, you're a wonderful ball striker. You and Shorty would have fun playing together because you're really good ball strikers.
Zach, what's your, are you a righty or a lefty?
Yeah, I'm a righty.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I wish I was lefty. Lefty swings are so pure.
Really?
How many lefties have you played with that are like a really pure?
My brother has a sick lefty swing.
Yeah.
That might be why.
Best left-handed swings on tour. Let's go right now. I'm going number one.
You gotta go Phil.
Mike Weir.
Mike Weir?
Yeah, well, he's Canadian, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, good point.
Speaking of Masters, he didn't just win the Masters. Congratulations. He won the Masters. But Mike Weir, he played well.
He made the cut, yeah.
Yeah.
Take that.
And Bernard Langer made the cut at...
How about that?
64.
Didn't they say his average drive was like 245 or something like that?
Yeah.
He's so fit, man. What a champ. Walking those hills every day. Like, that's sick.
Demp, as a Canadian Hall of Famer, do you feel like you have to root for all other Canadians all the time?
Not all other Canadians. Only certain... Yeah, like certain ones. A lot of time, yeah, I would say probably 90%.
So are you a big Rowan Wick guy?
Oh, yeah.
Gotta be.
Yeah.
I think we all are, no matter where he's from.
Yeah, that's true.
Is he your favorite cub?
Current roster right now?
Yeah.
No. Rizzo, for sure.
Well, Rizzo's everybody's favorite cub.
Yeah. But Wick's pulling in. You know, it's good.
Little shout out to Riz for doing his walk-off for cancer today in the midst of the COVID, still raising money for the kids.
But he's got to get better at walking his dog. You know, you pick your dog up. If the dog's out, he's got to do the full walk too.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin's got to get out there. He can't be scared of leaves.
We need Kevin. And I know he's got short legs. I know he drowns in those pile of leaves, but we got to get him going.
Yeah. Play in the leaves, run around the leaves, kick the leaves.
Demp, tell us a little bit about Off the Mound and how that started and then how it's been going. Because Marquee picked it up and it's been so much fun to watch.
Thanks. Dakota, you like it? Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
I'll email it to you. I'll email you some links.
Okay.
Or you can just go to the Marquee. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding.
I'll do that too.
Yeah, it was, Zach, have you seen it at all?
I actually watched the snippet with Rossi the other day.
Oh, okay. You watching any of the old ones at all, like last season?
I have not, no.
Yeah, there's some good ones in there, like Sean Casey's great. It's just fun. Like playing in my career, I, you know, love baseball. I love it. It was just like to be able to do it for that long. And but it's also your job. So when you're out there, it's not always funny and laughing. But the rest of the time, for me, it was. And I connected with teammates that way. So all those fun stories are, you know, just things I love. Locker rooms and bus rides and hotel rooms and dinners and the times away from the field that there's no pressure on us to do anything but just we're with each other every day anyways. It's a grind 162, right? Plus spring training. Like, I love my brother, but to spend that many days in a row with him, I'm like, dude, I need a break. No, you weren't invited to dinner. Sorry.
You can't spend 200 days with anybody. It doesn't matter how much you like them. Like 200 days in a row with the same people at some point.
Well, yeah. That's me and Zach live together usually during, well, not anymore. Now he's with the Tigers, but we would live together at home and we would be road roommates. And I think we both agree we'd get sick of each other at times.
August and September, be like, all right, Dakota, see you later.
Yeah, we've had enough.
But then a week after he's gone, you're like, God, where is he?
Yeah, exactly. And now he's gone forever. So I'm like, well, now I wish I had those days back.
Thanks, Dakota.
So I love that. And then getting into TV and doing that, like, you know, from that was kind of always my role, not my role or whatever. I chose it to be my role on teams to try and bring teams together and, you know, roll into a city at 3 a.m. and take the microphone and just give a tour of the city as we pull in and then get guys interacting and doing that. So when I got done playing, I always dreamt about that, like doing that and showing the personal side of the player, man. We get so caught up in what happens between the white lines that we have a misconception of who people are because they went 0-for-4 and my fantasy team lost, you know, like I love showing that side and seeing highlighting those players and, you know, showing the great work that Ian does with his work away from the field and his foundation and wanting to help. And that to me is fun. And then the meantime, just act like an idiot. And yeah, it's a blast.
That's one of the reasons that we started doing this was because you see your teammates and you have those connections with these guys and you know that they don't get painted properly in the media all the time. And just to give that platform to be able to talk to guys openly and have them share who they are. But it has to be because when I first saw you're off the mound, it was either at CubsCon or the one that you did at the VIG with Case and those guys. And it's like, okay, when you have a live audience, it has to be so, cause you can feed off them and you get the laughs and you're playing off the live audience all the time. And especially when they're humongous Cubs fans. So everything you say about the Cubs is hilarious to them, but it has to be different when you're doing it in a studio without that reaction, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like it's a different aspect. I like it from the ability to be able to try and like hone in on interviewing guys and how to ask questions. Like if you're, it's a lot and not even, it's not even an interview. That's, it's a conversation and that's all it is. And talk about things that, you know, went on in guys' careers so that when we get to, I love the live studio aspect of it. I love that feeling. I love having a live audience. You know, to me, stand-up comedy is a huge thing for me. So to have that, I love seeing people. I know how fun it is to be in the audience when you're there and, you know, something's funny or somebody tells a funny story and you feel that emotion. I live for that. I started going with my dad when I was in my teens and, you know, going to clubs all over this, you know, cities I would go to. And so to try and give that back in a baseball side is a lot of fun. And, you know, doing it this way is different, but I look forward to getting back to that day.
It's been an underused platform in baseball, I think. Just, I'm sure you felt it when you were playing, right? Like the personality was always so suppressed. It's been something that we as players, like sometimes for better or for worse, guys' personalities are coming out more in the game, and it's healthy for baseball because people get to see guys as more than just the object on the field, the zoo animal, as Rizzo often refers to it.
It really is. It's important. Like, you know, when I came up, it was twofold. I came up in a generation where it was, hey, you know, rookies, you guys like sit there, keep your ears open and your mouth shut and go play baseball, you know? And there was a lot of aspects about that that are really good and really healthy when approached in the right way. Like you have to respect the people who are doing it and know how hard it is. And in return, they're just trying to teach you how to do that, right? Ultimately, some guys show it differently. Some guys show it by leading. Some guys show it by putting it in different words. And some guy, even though they're hard, you know, they're a hard ass, like a John Lackey, man, that guy loves more than anybody. And like, he's just preparing you as a teammate and as a young guy to like, this is what it's going to take. And I'm not going to be easy on you. And the beer's on me, dinner's on me. Let's go throw a bullpen. Let's play catch. Let's do this. And let's sit on the bench and talk about pitching. And I think that nowadays when you're able to be yourself a little bit more and guys be more accepting about that just in life in general is really, really awesome, you know, but don't be late, you know, like John Lester can be late. Like Ian Happ can't be late.
Yeah.
Zach Story can't be late, you know, and John can just be late because of whatever reason it is, you know, he's put that time in, but you earn that time. And at the same time, be yourself, man.
Dakota, wasn't Lester late this year?
It was our very first pitcher meeting of camp, and he like missed it because he forgot we even had it. And Rossi's like, "What the fuck?" He's like, "What are we doing? It's the first one of the year." And it was just kind of like a joke. It was like, "Oh, it's Lester. Like, it's not a big deal."
John actually had to like go in and apologize to him and be like, "I'm sorry. Like, seriously, I just completely missed that one. It's a bad example. I didn't mean to do that."
It was the first one of the year too. It was a tough start, but he bounced back.
Not to bring it back to golf, but like, you know, seeing the players' personality, you know, like,
yeah, I hate talking about golf.
Yeah.
You play it back in your stance? Do you play a draw? Or are you like a little cut guy? Don't tell me that means you slice the ball.
No, when I'm good, I'm working it both ways, but I've been struggling and yeah, no. Well, that doesn't happen very often.
Now. I'm getting like four a side.
Yeah, right. That's what Ian's given. Back to like the players' personalities, you know, like Dustin Johnson is cold-hearted guy on the course, and then I don't know if you guys saw his speech after he won today. He like couldn't speak, you know, like, and you know, especially golfers, they don't have a platform, you know, how baseball guys do or basketball guys do. And I would have thought after he won, he'd be like, yeah, you know, on to the next one. But like, he literally had a tough time putting sentences together, and it was cool to see something like that.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's really hard keeping it all bottled up inside for him to finally, like, he just won the Masters in 2020. Like, people talk about all shortened season things and different time of the year, no fans, yada, yada, yada. There's to the athlete, to the person performing, there's still the same thing. You still want to win as much. And sure, you can feed off of emotion, but at the end of the day, to have the discipline to contain all that and just go out there and play your game like he did. And man, like in this year in 2020, dude, guys, 2020 is no joke. Like, mm-hmm. It's hard on everybody in multiple different ways. And to just have that emotion of, I'm guessing, like, as I don't know, I've never asked him this question. Maybe it's been answered, but I'm sure that winning the Masters is probably as prestigious as you can get. And I'm sure whether he voiced it or not, it was something he always really wanted to do. And for him to do that, man, and to do it in this year, and wow, special stuff. So good for him, man. Let it out. It's okay, man. Crying's healthy. Emotions are.
Absolutely.
It was the hardest mentally. We only played 60 games. They played pretty much a full schedule once they got going again. Like, it was the hardest thing mentally to get through, just not being able to see your family, not being able to go out to eat, not being able to be a normal person. Like, I'm sure for them too, same thing. Like, they couldn't do anything in between starts. And to win what is their last tournament of the year as the Masters? Temp, you have a pretty good Masters story. You went to, what year did you go to Augusta?
2 years ago. So 2018? Mm-hmm. 2018. Yeah,
How was that as a patron? One of the many patrons. Great.
Best sporting event I've ever been to, you know, right next to the World Series, you know, for like, just like how incredible it was to just be in there. There's no phones, you know, sandwiches are $2. The line to go to the bathroom could be 100 people deep, and you're through there. Like, they're just scouting them out. Six down on the left, two down on the right. Three up here, like, it's just, oh, the best, like, maneuvering traffic I've ever seen. And as somebody with a small bladder, like, to have to navigate that, making your way through. Oh, and there's a nice, fresh, ice-cold beer on the way out. Well, I'll take one of those and two for my buddies. Thanks. You know, and then we would park our chairs. We had chairs, and we just put them at Amen Corner and put a little business card in them and then see you later. And then those would be there. And people, that's how they worked it. And then you'd sit down in somebody's chair and they walk up and they're like, oh, you're in my seat. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. Thanks for the seat today. And you go find another one that's empty and you walk around. And the casualty, the casual way of all of it, and yet prestigious and amazing, and was really cool. So with that, the story that Happer's talking about, sorry, I got long-winded, because it's awesome. For anybody who has ever, have you guys been at all?
I have not. Love to.
Is it as beautiful as it looks on TV? Like, what's, when you see it on TV, especially without fans, it looks so open and just massive. And the elevation change, I felt like I could see the elevation change more this year than ever before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they did a good job of like bringing that to the fan, because everybody talks about it. And, you know, we're trying to get more in touch with the viewer, right? So for them to see it like that and show some of those camera angles, like on number three, when everybody sees this hole and you're like, how do you see all these guys make bogey on this easy little par four? And then you realize that if they like leave themselves on the front apron and it zips down, and you got this like chip shot that you can't, maybe hopefully you can see the flag.
Especially where they had the pin today too, over on the left.
Yep.
Just impossible to get to.
Yeah. And then, so then you got to make the option and the shot idea of like, do I pinch this and like check it up, or do I flop it? And if I leave it short, I'm screwed again. If I go past it, that's like,
that's not good for my short game.
No, that's my, I'm putt. How can I putt? Look at my caddy. Can I get putter up here?
I was going to keep it on the ground. Let me bump a driver.
Freewood then. Fine, I'll bump and run it. But so we go. I went with some good friends with Tito's, and we went down there. And I did a segment for MLB Network called Donuts with Dem. And every Friday we do this. Now I'm at the Masters on Friday. So I had this idea that this character, Ian McGregor from UK Sports, would come and he would do a little segment out in front of the gates of the Masters. And we did it from my phone. And our buddy Johnny Stark, this dude didn't look like Rich Beam, but he was the closest guy in our group that looked like Rich Beam. So we got him to walk by, and there's fans, and we're doing the little hit, and I'm just calling him over, like, you know, hey, there's PGA champion Rich Beam. Rich, come on over. Come to UK Sports. Sitting there, and we're just like, you know, jibber jabbering. Well, I got like a green stick, like pro green sport coat, pinstripe with some blue in it, and it's sharp, right? Really sharp. And then I got a wig, like this awesome, like flowing, just sick flowing reddish auburn wig. And then I got glass aviators on, and I was like, I'm not going to walk all the way back and put my phone back at the check-in station. I'm just going to turn it off, and I'm not going to turn it on, and I'm just going to go in and as Ian McGregor. So I just went in, and like, dude, I had like private security for holes. It was awesome. Like nobody was going to know. I had like so many security guards following me around because they're like, who's this dude? Come on. What's going on? Who's it? Hey, did you guys see him? Yeah, he's on two. He's behind two green. Like I didn't see them over in their corner with their little earpieces. Like,
they thought you were just going to run across the fairway or something.
Yeah, and so it was so funny. And then at one point, this was really great, was we're on the second green and behind the green, and I'm sitting there, and this lady comes up to talk to me. I shouldn't say lady, young woman. And it's Pat Burrell's wife. And so she just comes up to me. She says, sir, you have amazing hair. And I was like, oh, thank you, boo. And then she just kind of double taped at me. Like, what? What'd you say? And then she walked away and she started going over and started talking to Pat. And then Pat came walking over and he's like looking at me. And he's like, please tell me that's you.
That's so good.
All day I was Daniel Day-Lewis. I method act. Ian McGregor ordering my beers, going to the bathroom. I never got out of character.
You said until you got back to the cabin you were staying at, and then you finally were like,
yeah, like I finally we were back at the check-in, beautiful place that we would go have drinks beforehand, and then we were in the back, and I still had it on. I was still rocking it, and like finally I was just wig off, aviators. I'm like, oh, hey guys, how's your day?
That sounds like a hell of a day, though.
It was fun. Yeah, it was fun. I remember walking up eight, and Rory McIlroy was walking up. He just hit his drive, and he was walking up to his drive bomb, and he, like, glanced over, and then he double-taked, and then he, like, tanked his caddy, and he's like, hey, dude. And I just gave him one of these, you know? It's so great.
That's got to be one of the best, like, patron stories. I wonder if the security guards
– Yeah, too. Yeah, sorry.
I wonder if the security guards are still, like, telling people about that. Like this one time we just followed around this guy.
Oh man. Yeah, that was fun. That was a really fun time.
Damn. Tell me about the Red Sox playing with all those dudes on that team in 13. How special was that?
Oh man. Yeah.
I feel like because I've played with enough guys and been around enough guys that were on that team just through the Cubs connection that every story I hear about that team is just nothing but legendary. And we got more this year with Knapp.
Yeah, I think like it started early. Like we were guys who played with each other or against each other around the league for years. Some guys we didn't play with all, but we knew, right? Like I never played with Lack or against Lack, but it was John Lackey and we kind of same timeline and we knew each other that way. And then so spring training started and we just kind of had a good feel. We had a lot of mix of that and guys like Victorino and obviously Rossi and Johnny Gomes. And Johnny Gomes was like a huge glue part to that, like early on. Like he just nailed it right away. Like when you ask somebody in the morning how their day is and he just answers another day closer to the parade, like, you're like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, oh, sweet. We're going that way. Right on, man. Sign me up. I'm in. Yep.
Like in spring training?
First day of pitcher, not pitcher, when full workout. So the whole team was there. And I was just like, and then he just like grabbed his bat and went like out to the training room. And
if somebody does that, I mean, obviously if they do it enough times, you start to believe it. Like the first time, are you like, all right, relax.
Yeah. Yeah. Heck yeah. Like, hey man, you're going to fail for sure. But like, you're also going to succeed a whole bunch. And then there's this like middle ground that you have to try and make up, right? There's the middle point. Like as a starting pitcher, you would make 30, let's just say we're making 32 starts just to keep it even numbers, right? So you're going to have three to four clunkers, and you're going to have 3 to 4 that I can just throw my glove out and we win. Like we're just going to have those days where it's this guy, I won, you know? Oh, I won today. Like pitch 3 in, you're like, oh, we won. And then you're going to have this middle ground that you got to make up. And some of those are going to be really easy too. And some of them are going to be a grind and for different ways. The same way as a team, you're going to go through that. So when you can figure out a way to just trust each other and believe in each other. And then we had a moment that kind of really bonded us. Like here we were on this trajectory of like, we're really good teammates. Oh man, we're having a team dinner. Oh, we're having a blast. Like we're having fun. Like Yankee Stadium was great. Like, ha ha ha. Everything's good. Bomb the city. And we were like, whoa, who wants to fuck with us right now? Not just a group of ball players, but an entire little, you know, corner of the Northeast saying like, we got each other's backs. And it was just incredibly bonding. When we went to dinner in Cleveland, after that happened, I pitched that day that happened. And we left the ballpark. We'd always get this police escort that would take us out, all the guys the cops on their bikes would take us out to the airport. You know, Boston's a tight little city. And we got on the bus and we started hearing about like some sort of possible bombing, and we didn't really know anything about it. Like, you know, social media world wasn't blown up like it is now. Couldn't get it that fast, but we were still getting it pretty quick. And all of a sudden these guys just left and they were gone. And then we went to the airport and it was just like, you know, like stuff on. It was the fastest I ever got on a plane and boom, we were gone to Cleveland. And we just kind of said, hey, team dinner, you know, like, and it was like everybody showed up. I think maybe like the next Dubron, I think was starting the next day. Starting pitcher the next day, just that was the only, but like, I think he might even came to dinner and then left. And it was just like, everybody just, okay, let's do our part. Let's stick together. Let's help everybody. And then after they caught him, then it was like, really, let's do our part. And we just, it was amazing, man. You talk about talking something into existence. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. It felt like just the stories that the story was already written, like that mantra that went around, like the story's already written, boys, we just got to show up. It's like that for me was the coolest thing I've ever heard from day one. And I know Riz loves the getting the shirts made before the All-Star break even. Like, he loves that.
I got a greater story than that. You want to hear a really funny, like, talking something to his existence. So we had this meeting in Tampa Bay, a players-only meeting. And we just made it a players-only meeting. And we just, you know, had coaches like Torrey Lovello, our bench coach, was like, hey, what's the meeting about? And I was like, oh, well, it's funny. It's a players only meeting, Tori. So if we have a coaches and players meeting, we'll you're like, no. And he's just like, would you go talk to your manager then? So then I go into John's office and John's like, and this is like May, middle of May, end of May, right? Like 3 weeks into May. And Coach Farrell's like, hey, what's this meeting about? And I was like, playoff shares. 3 weeks into May, like you do that in September after you pinched. And he was like, what? I go, don't worry, we're gonna vote you a full share. Like,
don't worry about it.
Yeah. And it was just like, we were just that confident, and it, at times for sure it was arrogant, but we didn't care. We just were bound and determined to beat you. And yeah, it was really, really fun to be around.
And then when you go out there and back it up, it makes it even cooler too, obviously.
Yeah. Oh god, yeah, it makes the story way better. Yeah. Yeah. But like, the belief in backing it up, Dakota, like that's how we believed we were going to do it. I was challenging you like, you know, go 7 innings and then look at like Lester and be like, oh, dude, you got to go 8 now. I gave 3 guys a day off. Like you better go get somebody a day off.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the fun, pushing each other as teammates and getting the best out of each other and then understanding and being there for them. Yeah, when they succeed, cool, you know. But like when they fail, you're there for them, right? Pick them up. Yeah, that's
100%.
Yeah. Pat, if you're not having obvious shirts make you guys championship shirts, day one of spring training, you're failing.
it's such an incredible move. It's such an incredible move. I honestly, I feel like with the coverage that we get on social media now and with all the media channels, doing something like that would be, it would, you would need a group of guys that didn't give a fuck to such an extent that when it blew up on social media and when everybody got asked questions about it, that everybody in unison could just be like,
just stone cold, no laughing, but like, yeah, it's not a joke.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. You gotta truly believe it. It's not like just like slapdick about it. Like, oh yeah, like we're going to win. Like, you gotta really be like, no, like we're actually going to win the World Series. Like, it's not a joke. It's real.
Or if you're going to say it, if you're going to say it, then you got to go out there and do your part.
Yeah. 100%.
Or at least some of the time, like, you know, there were plenty of times I didn't do my part, you know, still remember snapping when I gave up those hits to Kawasaki and Bonifacio all day. And meanwhile, I'm cruising through smoke and Batista, but I can't get these guys out. And, yeah, I didn't do my part that day. I didn't do my part.
Demp, were you a snapper?
I was. Whoop-top, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What, do you have like a best snap story you could tell us?
I got a really good one. So I did. That was like, I had a tough time with that. I don't know, ending up that like anger or something, whatever it was. But if I had a tough game and a tough moment sometimes in a game where I just would kind of go down the tunnel and have my way, and we were in Pittsburgh and I was really having a tough time. It was a tough year. I was battling through injury too and not pitching very well. And I went down into the hitting cage area there in the dugout. And there's a sink that's on the wall there. It's at least the second sink. I know that. So I was still mad and I closed the door and I just took a bat. I just started whacking away on this thing. Like, just like boom, boom, back and forth. And I'm just like, choo! And it kind of like comes off like halfway and it's just swinging like this. And I'm just like, I just take one more whack and I whack through it and I knock the pipe off and the water shoots me directly in the forehead. Like, just like in the forehead, it's just like all over my face. I'm like, I'm just sitting there and I'm just like, go for it, man. I didn't move. I'm just like, it's just pumping me. I'm just like, yeah. I just did that. This is mine. I got to own this right now.
That sounds like something out of a movie.
This is better. So now I'm getting married and I'm on my bachelor party. And we're taking a bus from Vancouver to Las Vegas, Nevada. And I got 13 people on this bus. And my best man and my brothers, and my dad and my uncle and all these people. And we have this drive on the bus and they present me with this present. And I open it up and it's somebody, they found it on eBay, all the sink parts. And my buddies bought them off of eBay. Yeah, and gave it to me in a frame case with like part of the bat, part of the sink. It was really awesome.
Absolutely incredible.
That's unbelievable.
Speaking of freakout stories, I was listening to part of my take when you went on, and you talked about the Jim Leland story.
Yeah,
and I thought the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life is I don't know where it was when he came back and said he's going to call the cops on you guys.
We're having us arrested for impersonating Major League Baseball players.
The whole story, the way you brought it up, was the funniest thing in the world. Oh.
Yeah. And the thing was like, you remember how I was saying earlier on, like, you know, sometimes there's times as a rookie, you just need to like just stay quiet and do your job and like watch what the pros are doing, the guys that have been doing it, watch what they're doing. Watch how, or listening to them if they tell you to do it, you know, even if they're not doing it themselves. He was like really good about, you gotta get better. You gotta get better than that if you're gonna wanna keep playing here. And I really appreciated that because I'm not there for, I don't need anything sugarcoated, right? Like, I need to know what I need to do. And if that means a kick in the ass every once in a while, that's okay. Like, I remember in Montreal, 1998, pitching against the Expos, 3-0. I walked the 8 and 9 guy, I believe it was. I think it was the 8-hole hitter and the 9-hole hitter, 2 out, winning 3-0. And he came out to the mound and he's pulled me. I ain't giving up any runs yet or anything, 2 out. And he's just like, all right, give me the ball. I was like, oh, all right. And then nothing, crickets, right? Like, I'm just like that. And then Rich Doobie's my pitching coach. He's like, man, you can't be walking number 8 and 9 to get to the leadoff guy. I mean, you're not going to be pitching here very long. You keep doing that, right? From like Boston. And then so then I'm like, Okay. I got you. I'm figuring that's why I got pulled. And, you know, and so I was sitting there. So the next day I go out to go running, and I'm running in the outfield at Olympic Stadium doing laps. And I come back to the bench, and Leland's out just smoking a heater, and he just looks over and he goes, "You sure yanked your ass in a hurry yesterday, huh?" And I'm just like caught off guard. I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh, maybe just throwing it over the plate, you'll probably get better results." Walked away. And he was like, you know, and then he just said, "You'll get him." And then he was nice. He was like, "You'll get him next time. You know, go get him next time. You better." You know, and it was great. It was great, man. It was so great. Man, this is awesome, man. I don't smoke, but like a manager, and he's just, you know, man, you know, like, I don't know. There was something very 50s about it. It was cool.
That funny story, when I was like 10 years old, I was throwing down a tournament in the Cal Ripken thing, and I was pitching, and I was struggling, whatever, for like 2 or 3 innings. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm doing the Ryan Dempster glove thing when I throw. Shove for the next 3 innings. Like the next 3 years I threw, I did the glove waggle as I was throwing. I was convinced that was the reason why I was throwing well.
And you switched because why?
Great question.
People, there is a lot of kids out there imitating you.
With the glove wiggle?
Yeah, that's awesome.
I do think it's awesome. But you just didn't want to pitch anymore?
No. My arm would not be able to handle that.
Yeah.
Dakota, what's the chances that you try the Ryan Dempster glove wiggle next spring training?
I'll try anything if it gets me some outs. I'll do just about anything. Yeah, I don't throw out of the stretch, though, or I only throw out of the stretch, and I feel like it's more of a wind-up thing, so I don't know
why do you
work that in.
You throw out of the stretch? I want to know
why. Just because I'm a reliever. I don't know. I figure when you come in a lot of times with guys on base, just be prepared for that at all times and make it a lot simpler. It's only have to worry about one thing.
Yeah, I hear you.
Did you throw out of the windup when you were closing?
You should throw out of the windup this offseason while you're working for a little while.
Yeah, I would do that. I did it. I used to throw out of the windup sometimes in college.
You could pitch 7-8 innings a night in the show.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just my opinion.
Did you still throw out of the windup when you were closing down?
No, as a reliever, I would just do the same thing.
That was Canadian Hall of Famer, the Ryan Dempster. Zach's eating a chip.
Ian, how'd you learn that he's a Canadian Hall of Famer?
Dakota, I was really hoping that you would jump in when he was talking about Canada, and you just didn't.
Well, when you stole it, I texted Zach while we were in the interview and said, Ian asked me if I had any questions beforehand. I told him what I was going to say. He stole it, and then I was done.
You didn't jump. First of all, you didn't jump in quick enough.
You used it in a... So as a Canadian, you didn't even ask about it. You just like called him it.
1-0, Ian. That was rude.
You didn't even ask anything about it. You just like, oh, like we're talking a Canadian Hall of Famer, and like just rolled right by it. I was like, I was going to use it in like a conversation.
If he texted me on the side, he was upset. That was rude.
I wasn't upset. I was like, oh, okay. Like he asked me if I had any questions before we started the interview. I told him, and then he wrote it down and stole it. Well, bad etiquette. Poor interviewer etiquette.
That was rude,
Ian. Care to comment?
Homework, and you literally just copied off them because you didn't do your homework.
That's right. That's literally what happened.
Dakota spent all weekend doing his homework that you scheduled on Friday, and you said, I'm not doing it.
You came into class 5 minutes before the bell rings and copied mine down.
Yeah.
Why don't you guys stop texting each other during the interview?
No. That's not how this works. You don't get to flip this on us.
It's ridiculous.
It was a great interview, though. Okay, let's move on. We'll let it slide this time, Ian. Okay.
Your next guest, because just ask, hey, what are you going to bring up?
Oh, I can't. I'm going to control the interview next time, like Ian does. I'm just going to take over and not let Ian talk. That's what I'm going to do.
Can we talk about DJ winning the Masters, please?
Yes, we can. We can talk about. Hey, I also wanted to say to Demp when he said he hit 14 of 18 greens in regulation, which is very impressive. I think I don't know how many holes that is or what hole he was on today. But they said that DJ had hit 57 of 64 greens and regulations at one point today. And I was like, pardon me?
Bro, what? He put a clinic on for every aspect of the game of golf. Every aspect of it.
He went 20 under.
It was a record.
Cam Smith was the first guy to shoot 4 rounds in the 60s.
And he lost by 5.
By 5.
Smoked.
Zach, what you were saying about like DJ being so chill, though. If the no crowds benefit anyone, it's someone like him that's like laid back at all. Like, he doesn't really ride off the crowds. And like Rory plays for the crowds. Like, Rory wants the crowds going nuts. Patrick Reed wants the crowds going nuts. Tiger, obviously. But like, DJ's just like calm, cool, collected at all times. And he's just like, I'm just going to go out there and shoot a 65. And it's easy.
That interview was the craziest thing. Like, I didn't think he had that in his body.
No, I didn't think he had emotions like that. And honestly, it was nice to see like how much he cares. Because like a guy like that with the, he's just so even. It's like, does he even enjoy winning? Like, I don't know.
He was like, yeah, you know, like my brother started crying. That choked me up on the green. And I was like, oh, that's nice, whatever. And then the second interview when he came back out, he literally couldn't speak. And I was like, this is awesome. This is literally incredible. This is a completely different person than anybody, unless you obviously know the guy. But like, I literally would have thought he'd be like, yeah, it was cool.
Well, I think it's another one of those, like, he's obviously a top, I mean, he's number one in the world right now, but he's like a top five golfer for the last couple of years. And that's only his second major. And it's like, as good as this guy is, that he only has two is kind of incredible.
Would you rather have Koepka's career with four majors and like less than 10 total wins, or DJ's? I think that was 24 wins and two majors.
Majors, Brooks. You play for the big ones.
Yeah.
Brooks is also what, 10 years younger than DJ? Maybe not 10, but like 8 years younger. DJ's like 37. I'm gonna get our statisticians on it. Hold on, you guys continue discussing. I'm gonna get our statisticians to work. DJ is 36, I'm hearing in my ear. And Brooks is 30. Okay, 6 years, but still 6 more years. Like, that's a lot of wins that could happen in that amount of time.
But it's like, I feel like Dustin Johnson's like starting to literally hit the ground again. Like, he's like, all right, I figured it out.
He's got 20 plus wins, and he's been world number one more than probably anyone in the current era, or pretty close. Maybe Rory.
I mean, behind Tiger.
I was like, what are you talking about?
Obviously behind Tiger.
What are we talking about right now?
Can we talk about Rory's weekend too?
Rory with the most incredible comeback of all time.
Put the 75 on the card. It was like, all right, that's enough.
I thought the most incredible thing he did, I don't know, Ian, how much you were watching. I know Zach was watching, but on Friday, because of the rain delay, he had to finish round one, like early the morning Friday, finish up his 75 that he shot. Swing looked horrible. Like, I was literally like, oh my God, like Rory's broken. And then he comes out, what did he shoot round two? Like a 66, I think.
I think so, yeah.
He just comes right out and just like fires off birdies. It's like the 20 minutes on the range fix that quick for you.
The par three, I thought, 16, when he double crossed, he tried to play a putt and then drew it into the water. He's like, yeah, so bad. I think that was like the last worst shot he did of the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, Rory's going a little roll here, kind of joking. He had like three birdies in a row. And I'm like, holy shit, he's climbing.
He tied for fifth.
It must have been because Dom was like, ah, when's Rory going to win again?
I feel like I never hear anything about him. When he said that, I was like, I feel like Rory's always like there on Sunday in majors. Like, he's always, I see his name.
Yeah. I mean, the top 10 again with JT, Rory, Brooks, DJ.
Plus Cameron Smith and was it
Sung J.M.?
Yeah. Dude, that dude's swing gives me like anxiety.
The slow backswing?
Like,
he chips like that too. It's terrifying.
If I did that, I would really hit the ball for Hosel every single time.
This episode's going to be way too long. We got to get the people out of here. Tell them what they need to do.
I expect to talk
all the time. Get their screen times and tell them what they need to do. Like, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. When I say parse, you say rum.
Rum.
That'll be a shirt.
I got 5 hours, 52 minutes.
That has to be a shirt.
Obvious shirts. When I say parse, you say rum.
Yes.
5 hours, 52 minutes. 2 hours. 2 hours. 2 hours and 1 minute. We're on my fantasy football app. I went 0-3 this week, so not good. Not good at all. Zach, what do you got?
5:51. 1 minute less than Dakota.
No, I had 5:57. Jeez, Zach.
You said you had 5:52, right?
I thought I had 5. Yeah. Was it 52? Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is 52. Ah, nuts.
Woke up from 3 to 5 in the morning and didn't put my phone down.
What was your number?
6:37.
Thanks for coming out.
Zach's always got an excuse when he's worse.
New shirt coming out. When I say parse, you say rum. Parse.
Rum.
Hey, Mr. Obvious shirt. We'll get those printed out tomorrow.
Yeah, Zach's running the printing press tomorrow.
Yeah. I got it. Yep. It's in my ear. But yeah, tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
We need likes, subscribes, unsubscribes, resubscribes. I want the compound back in the top 100 of sports podcasts, and I want it this week.
Remember we were number 20-something one time?
That was the Compound Podcast presented by Parse Rum.
What episode number was it? Parse. What episode number? Rum.
Episode
38.
38.
Rum. Plant a tree.
Parse.
Rum.
Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.